Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, Episode 83. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Istanbul.
I got my bags packed and on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Oh, no.
15-hour flight. Oh, I don't think I'll ever be coming home. You know I love it. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I just have one news story for you today, and this one was sent in by Tim from the TwistedWrist.com, Canada's motorcycle podcast. It's a news story that comes from the Toronto Star. A first-class passenger on a flight from New Delhi to London awoke to find a corpse of a woman who had died in the economy cabin being placed in the seat next to him, British Airlines said Monday. The flight economy section was full, and the cabin crew needed to move the woman and her grieving family out of that compartment to give them some privacy. The first-class passenger, Paul Trinder, told the Sunday Times newspaper that he was sleeping during a February flight from India and woke up with the crew placed the dead woman in the empty seat next to him. I didn't have a clue what was going on. The stewards just plunked the body down without saying a thing, the newspaper quoted Trinder as saying. I remember looking at this frail, sparrow-like woman and thinking she was very ill. When I asked what was going on, I was shocked to hear she was dead. Well... At least you don't have to worry about your seatmate talking too much. If you, like Tim, see an interesting, or in this case, bizarre news item about travel, drop me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. This is the second of a two-part episode on Turkey, and this part will focus in on Istanbul. I won't be talking in this part about why I went to Turkey, other than to say that I went to visit a former exchange student, Yavuz, and I won't be talking about learning Turkish, because I did that in the previous podcast, or some of the other places that we went to, like Eastern Turkey, Izmir, or Ephesus. So if you're interested in that, and you haven't heard it, check out part one of this, which is episode 82, Turkey, Asia. So let's talk about Istanbul, and that's where I flew into on this trip and where many of you will enter Turkey for the first time. Istanbul is a city that is on the border between what we call Asia and what we call Europe. Most of Istanbul is on the European side of this, and it tends, not necessarily just for that reason, but it does tend to be more of a European city. And it is a very Europe-facing city, as the country is also facing more towards Europe and joining the European Union, obviously, right now. The body of water that separates the European part of Istanbul from the Asian part of Istanbul is the Bosphorus. If you follow the Bosphorus north from Istanbul, you get to the Black Sea. If you follow it south, it joins a somewhat wider body of water called the Dardanelles, which flows out to the Aegean Sea. The European side of the city, or the western part of the city, is also split by a body of water, in this case called the Golden Horn. South of the Golden Horn is the ancient city, the oldest part of the city, which was originally Constantinople. And north of the Golden Horn is immediately the area of Beyoğlu. Don't be confused by the G that's in there that has an accent which is not pronounced. And Beyoğlu was originally the more European part of the city. It's where the embassies from various European countries as well as other countries were located. Now, I stayed in Istanbul on both parts of this trip, both of coming and the going. The first time I stayed near Taksim, and Taksim is a major square up in Beylul, and a lot of different roads and such converge on Taksim, and I stayed in a hotel very near there. And we first got there at midnight, and even at midnight, that is a very bustling part of the city. Trying to go to sleep at 12:30, 1 o'clock at night, there are still horns honking, pedestrians out. There's a lot of nightlife in that particular area, especially on a street that goes from Taksim down back towards the older part of the city, a street called Istiklal Caddesi. Caddesi is just street. It starts with a C because the C in Turkish is pronounced as a J. And that is the street where the old embassies used to be, and now most of those are still there, but they, because the capital has moved to Ankara, they are now consulates. And so I went to sleep with the hustle and bustle of a very European city in my ears, and I woke up at about 5:30 in the morning to this sound. Which is, of course, the call to prayer, because although this is a very European-feeling city, it is still an Islamic city. Now, some people have asked me what it's like to be in a city that is mostly Muslims, and whether people take their prayer rugs with them, and whether everything stops when the call to prayer comes out. And I can't speak for other places, but in Istanbul, what happens for most people is they put their finger in their ear so that they don't have to hear it because they're on their cell phone making a call. So it doesn't really seem to change what most people are doing, and yet it does provide this sort of background heartbeat of the city. And it does start relatively early. No matter where you are in Istanbul, you are near a mosque, whether it's a small mosque or one of the larger imperial mosques from the Ottoman Empire, you are somewhere near a mosque. As I mentioned before, one of the interesting shopping and walking streets that goes from Taksim down towards the old city is the Istiklal Caddesi, and it's also a good place to eat dinner, as there are a number of restaurants along there. And we ate at a place called Çiçek Pasaje, which is originally a flower market. And instead of having flower stalls now, it has a number of restaurants. And one of the reasons that Yavuz wanted particularly to go to that place for dinner was it is a place we could hear Turkish music. And so I'll play you just a clip of the Turkish music. And this is the song in the background. A woman who was one of the other patrons had gotten up and was starting to do what I would call an Arabic dance, although that's not the name for it in Turkish. When they heard that Yavuz was from Gaziantep, they played a song that would be appropriate to Gaziantep. And when they heard that I was from the United States, they played Havana Gila, which I'm not sure why. And if you're wondering the name of the place, Çiçek Pasaje means flower passage. As you walk down the street, you'll see a lot of 19th century architecture. You'll see the various consulates that are still there. And then you'll also see, hidden a little from the street, a number of churches that were built then to support the European communities that were around the consulates. You'll also see a trolley car which still runs the length of this street from Taksim down to the tunnel. And the tunnel is the second oldest subway in the world that's still in operation, and it is a funicular, which basically takes you down the hill. Istanbul is built on hills, and at Taksim and at Istiklal, you are on the hill, and then as you go down the hill towards the old city. You'll also see people selling chestnuts and simit, and simit is a round sesame-covered bread, fairly soft, very enjoyable, and the whole city to me smells of the smell of roasted chestnuts and simit. And speaking of food, another interesting place to eat nearby to Istiklal is just down the hill from Istiklal towards the Bosphorus, about halfway through the street. There's a street called Cezayir Sokak, or also known as French Street. And it's not really a street. It's really a set of steps with very, very small cafes on each side. As in, there's one cafe on the left, there's the steps in the middle, and then there's a second cafe with one table on the right. But it's an interesting place, kind of dead in the daytime, but interesting nightlife there. So that wasn't in my guidebook. And I used, as I said last time, the Eyewitness Travel Guide to Turkey. But it's something that the locals know about. And so I discovered it because of Yavuz and his friend Emre, who was our guide on the very first day I was in Istanbul, and thanks to Emre. Emre goes to a school in Istanbul that is taught in English, and so his English was wonderful. And besides knowing places like this, he also was an expert in a lot of the cultural and history because he had taken courses in that in college. So continuing on down the hill and skipping the tunnel and saving that for the trip back up the hill, you come to the Galata Tower. And the Galata Tower is one of the main landmarks in Beyoğlu. And it was built in 1348 by a Genoese colony in what was then Constantinople. And I would recommend going up in the tower. There's a wonderful view of the city from there and looking over at the older part of the city. It's funny when you're talking about a tower that's 1348 and it's in a newer part of the city. But looking back over the river at the older part of the city, you get a great view from the tower. At this point, continue walking down the hill until you get to the light rail, which will cross the river and go into the older portion of the city. And you're going to grab the light rail, strangely enough, for Zeytinburnu. And Zeytin means olive, and Burnu means nose. But it also means peninsula. But that caused a little confusion as my guides were trying to explain to me what that meant. And then you'll get off of the light rail at the Sultanahmet station. And right here next to each other are three of the main landmarks in Istanbul. And we'll do them one at a time, and we'll do them in chronological order. And the oldest of these is Hagia Sophia. Hagia Sophia was a Byzantine church built by the Emperor Justinian from 532 to 537. It's the third Christian church on that spot, and the second one, built by Theodosius, was burned down in the Nika riots, which were started in part due to the high taxation that Justinian had put onto the people because he was trying to reconquer the Western Roman Empire and reform the Roman Empire. So Justinian puts down the riot, kills 30,000 rioters and some of the senators who were supporting them, and then builds Hagia Sophia and then gets ready to march on Western Roman Empire when plague hits Europe for the first time, coming here to Constantinople. Hagia Sophia is certainly magnificent architecturally, and you can see its design echoed in some of the major imperial mosques also in the city, like Sultanahmet, or the Blue Mosque, which is just opposite it. It has a large central dome extended by half domes and then larger dome segments. Inside, it is relatively dark. It has been used as a church up until 1453 when it was converted into a mosque, and then the early 1900s when it was converted into a museum. Some of the original Byzantine mosaics were preserved because they had been plastered over during the time of its use as a mosque. And so you'll still see some of the symbols and some of the parts that were put in when it was changed into a mosque, as well as these wonderful mosaics. You'll see a mosaic of Mary high above the old altar in the front of the church, as well as mosaics of Jesus and, of course, Justinian and Theodora, his empress, also are pictured in these mosaics. There's very little left of the original church from Theodosius, just a little of the entryway as you come in. When I was there, you could only see three quarters of the dome because they were doing fairly major restoration on the ceiling at the time. But even with that, the beauty of Hagia Sophia, I think, is still very, very evident. Right opposite from Hagia Sophia is what many tour books will call the Blue Mosque. The real name of it is the Sultanahmet Mosque, and it is named after Sultanahmet I. There's some controversy in terms of the building of this mosque because for two reasons. One is Sultanahmet had not yet won any major victories for Islam, and the other reason is he decided to put in six minarets. It's interesting to note that the number of minarets, especially here in Istanbul, has to do with who built the mosque. And so a normal mosque will have one, one that is built by a grand vizier may have two, and then if you see one that has four or more, it was built by the sultan. And this one has six, and the problem with that was, at the time, the only mosque in the world that had six minarets was the one in Mecca. And so people thought that he was trying to outdo the mosque in Mecca and asked him to tear down one of the minarets. And instead, he paid to have a seventh minaret built in Mecca. The mosque is built early in the 1600s and has the similar dome-on-dome design as Hagia Sophia, which is directly opposite it. It is known as the Blue Mosque because of the use of tiles from Iznik, and Iznik was the leading producer of tiles at the time, and particularly a tile that has this blue design pattern. One thing that was interesting for me is, unlike the Mujadar architecture in Spain, which is also coming from a Muslim origin, the tile work in the Ottoman Empire and even some of the miniatures would have depictions of living beings. The tile work would tend to only have plants, but some of the Ottoman miniatures would include even pictures of Muhammad in it. And so the walls of the mosque are covered with 20,000 of these hand-painted tiles from the city of Iznik. The ancient name of that city is Nicaea. For those of you who have heard of the Nicene Creed, it originates from there. The tile work comes much later, during the Ottoman period. The other interesting thing about the mosque, obviously a mosque does not have furniture. I knew that, and was carpet in the ground. You take off your shoes before you go in. You're encouraged not to go in during prayer time, or at least not to take pictures. And there's really an area that the tourists are recommended to stay in. The mosque is very light and has very low-hanging, large, flat chandeliers in it, which was a bit of a surprise to me. So the whole ceiling of the mosque is filled with these wires holding up these rather flat chandeliers. One weird thing about the mosque is, because you are taking off your shoes, you are putting them in this mosque, which is large. It doesn't have niches that you can put them in like the smaller mosques, but instead there are boxes of plastic bags, many of them from cruise lines. And so you're taking off your shoes and you're putting them in this plastic bag and you're taking them into the mosque with you because you're exiting from a different exit. But it made the mosque sort of have this surreal shopping center sort of thing, where everybody is walking around with shopping bags in them and rustling a bit as they walk. The third major attraction here, just around the back of Hagia Sophia, is the Topkapı Palace. And the Topkapı Palace was the official imperial palace of the Ottoman Empire from 1465 to 1853. So for almost a 400-year period, this very Oriental-style palace, Oriental in the Turkish meaning of the word, was the center of the Ottoman court and also where the sultan and his family, his wives, would live. There are two major sections of the palace and also two admission charges as you go in. The main imperial part is one charge, and then if you want to go into the harem, which you probably heard pronounced harem, or the family living quarters, that's a separate charge and is a guided tour given in Turkish and English only, although you can purchase a guide in other languages for a self-guided tour along with that. Plan a few hours to see the palace, and I would recommend seeing the harem, although I didn't think that that was the most interesting part of that. So if you're rushed, that would be the part to skip for sure. And then one part that you're certainly going to want to see is the imperial treasure, as well as some of the imperial costumes. The custom was that when the emperor died, they would pack away what he wore in a airtight container. And so they still have some of these kaftans from emperors from over the years, and it's interesting to see how the original designs look very Chinese in origin, the Turks having come from closer to China, and then later on change into the more distinct Ottoman style. The palace also has one of the finest collections of Chinese as well as Japanese porcelains. The Chinese porcelains cover four different dynasties, the Song, Yuan, Ming, and Qing dynasties, so covering time period from the 10th century to the 20th century, basically. As well as in the armory, you will find a lot of treasures that are imperial treasures for Turkey, and they're kept here in the Topkapı Palace. And they would include gifts to other rulers that were given back or things that were taken in conquest. And then there are also some relics that are available here to be seen also, including hair from Muhammad's beard, two of his swords, one of his mantles, one of his teeth, a letter written by him, and an impression of his footprint. And in that room, there is someone who is chanting the Quran day and night while the visitors are allowed in. Also in the treasury room, you'll see the spoonmaker's diamond, which is an 86-carat diamond, said to be discovered in a dump in Istanbul. If you finish all of that by lunchtime, or you want to take a break in the middle, you can go across the street and have a Sultanahmet kofte at the Sultanahmet Koftecisi, which is a well-known restaurant that serves what can only be described as sort of a long meatball, served often with pickled peppers. And you can get ayran to wash that down, which is a drinkable yogurt. Not my favorite, but a very traditional Turkish lunch. There are three other smaller sites to see near Sultanahmet. There's the Basilica Cistern, which is an underground cistern built by Justinian and not discovered by the Ottomans until 100 years after the conquest, when they figured out that people were fishing for fish from their basements. They eventually figured out that it was an underground cistern that had been built underneath the city. There's also the obelisk in what used to be the Hippodrome. And right next to that is the Museum of Turkish and Islamic Arts, which has a fine display of Turkish carpets as well as other things. Heading west from the Sultanahmet area, you come to the Grand Bazaar. And this is walking distance to get from one to the other. And the Grand Bazaar is certainly not something to be missed, but I would expect that someone will try and sell you a carpet. I went twice to the Grand Bazaar, once on the first trip to Istanbul and once on the later trip, and ran into the same carpet salesman, and the second time I ran into him, I happened to have my recorder on. And so this is a little bit of the background sounds for the Grand Bazaar and what it's like to be sold a Turkish carpet.
Hiya. You are looking for me? Excuse me, sir, Mr. Gentleman. Why you don't want to check in my place?
I don't want a carpet.
Okay, not this time?
Not this time.
Another time?
Another time.
Okay, I give him my business card. Please, sir, give him my business
card. And because I had the microphone running, I did follow him back to his shop again, which I had been to before, to get his business card and record this little bit of dialogue.
See, happy story. The Kurdish people, they have so beautiful the carpet. You know why? Look, Kurdish people, no business. Understand? Anatoly, you know the village? Not fabric. The woman make the what? Making the carpet. Make the lunch after making carpet. Make the lunch after carpet. It's very important. Do you know why?
I don't know why.
Information. Because they have the time. Okay. Understand? They have the time. The wool is all hand-spun wool. They're all natural. They're making this person, they have the time. They make very slow. Because, then you know, they're better than for the fasting. The slow. You know that?
Mm-hmm.
Which part American?
California.
California. Which part?
San Jose.
San Jose. Look, sir. So 1 second.
And they invited me to sit down and look at a book of pictures of various carpets. It's also quite common for them to bring tea for you if they think they're going to sell you a carpet.
Look, it's these are all of the old pieces. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
You can read it. They're all English.
Mm-hmm.
Understand? Because they're from Anatoly, the Persian, Caucasian, all of the my place. Understand? Look at how beautiful the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Because the antique carpets, we have all of the my place.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because we are 12 brothers.
Okay.
We are 12 brothers. We are all sell carpets. Bizim büyük katalog getirsene. Yurdan katalog getirsene. He, çabuk, hazır ol. Look, sir. Because You know that we have many stores.
Mm-hmm.
We have all of the carpet kini. Like, it's my second brother. It's you know, we are Kurdish. We have the best quality, best place, the money place, the carpet.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
You're welcome.
I'm really not looking for carpet, though,
sure,
today.
You don't buy today. I want to show you. Check our price. You can look to what I have. Do you understand? Look, that's beautiful.
Where
are you from?
California, America.
Oh, which part?
San Jose.
You have a place in Carmel.
Oh, you're kidding.
That's why it's very, very close. You've been in Carmel, of course.
I need to go. I am meeting someone. Teşekkürler.
How come you speak Turkish?
I had a Turkish exchange student live with us for about a year.
Oh, really? Where was he from?
He was from Gaziantep.
And you have sent your...
I came this time to see him.
You mean you are the student?
He was with us as a student, and I came this time to see him now that he is home.
Ah, that's very interesting. It must be very, very great, excitement for you.
It's a very good trip.
And how many days are you staying in Turkey?
This is my last one.
Are you, how many days?
Been here for a year. A year, a week.
A week. And you're going back to the United States without any of our rugs?
I am.
How come? Everybody who comes from the United States buys rugs.
Not quite everyone. Apparently everyone but one.
You are the exception.
I am the exception.
Do you have any carpets at home?
I don't. Not of this type. We have carpet.
You have wall-to-wall carpets?
Yeah.
Any timber floor, hardwood floor?
Some.
And you don't use even Persian carpets?
No, we don't.
The reason why is you don't like them?
I like hardwood floor.
Okay.
Saloon.
If you couldn't tell, I found the whole experience to be amusing, partly because I knew the microphone was running, and partly because it was just amazing they couldn't understand that I might actually not want to buy a carpet. Near the Grand Bazaar is also the Spice Bazaar, and the Spice Bazaar is near the New Mosque. And when I say the New Mosque is over 400 years old. The Spice Bazaar is a real interesting, a much smaller bazaar, and a good place to either just see the various colorful spices, to have the same kind of conversation, except not with carpet, but with spices, or to buy yourself some Turkish delight or some other thing to keep yourself going until dinner time. If you continue on to the west, you'll come to an ancient Roman aqueduct, the next larger mosque there, the Mosque of Suleiman the Magnificent, or the Suleymaniye Mosque. You'll also come to, eventually, the walls that surrounded ancient Constantinople. These would be the walls of Theodosius. Theodosius I, who I mentioned earlier, was the last emperor of Rome who ruled both the Eastern and Roman Empire. And he built these walls to protect the city, and they did protect it for 1,000 years. And then the Turks, after they came in, restored the walls, and much of the walls still remain standing, although they are in somewhat of a ruined state right now. And then at the southern end of the walls, you will also come to the Fortress of Seven Towers, which was built by the Turks shortly after the conquest to protect what was then Istanbul. And if you stand on the ramparts of the Fortress of Seven Towers, you will see the amazing number of ships that are coming in and out of the port of Istanbul or coming through the Bosphorus on their way to ports up in the Black Sea. The other interesting thing I found that was near the ancient walls was the Church of St. Sevior in Cora. In Cora literally means in the country, so this was a church that was originally built out of the country but has now been surrounded by the city. And inside this church you will find many examples of some of the best work of Byzantine murals as well as mosaics. So there are frescoes in this church in the first part of it, and then there are also these wonderful mosaics. And both the frescoes and the mosaics date from the early 14th century. And despite the fact that it had just the most beautiful artwork that I saw in Istanbul, and probably in some ways more impressive than that I saw in Hagia Sophia, it was almost empty. I had the place almost all to myself. Not that many people get that far out from the downtown area, because it is a little too far to walk, and you really do need to either catch a cab or, like I do, take a bus to that area. The first of a series of video podcasts on Istanbul will feature this particular chapel and some of the artwork from it. So if you're not watching the enhanced version with the pictures, you'll get a chance to see it if you subscribe to the video podcast. And when we finally got tired, well, when Yavuz, who was with me, finally got tired of looking at old stuff, as he would call it, we headed out to the Pierlotti Cafe. Pierlotti is a lovely cafe with a view overlooking the Golden Horn, which sits up on a hill above a cemetery. There's both gondola that goes up to it, the front side, or you can take a cab up the back side, as we did. And it's a lovely view on a lovely day to sit there with your cup of chai and take a break. Changing direction again, if we had headed way back in the beginning of this podcast down towards the Bosphorus from Taksim instead of down Istiklal Caddesi, we would have come to the Dolmabahçe Palace. And the Dolmabahçe Palace was built in the 1800s, and so it was a much more European-style palace, while the palace that we had talked about so far was a much more Oriental-style palace. That was a palace that was used for a longer period of time, 400 years. The Dolmabahçe was built later on when the Ottoman Empire was certainly in decline, and actually they borrowed money to build this, but it is nonetheless a beautiful palace. There are two tours here. I would recommend both tours, both the main tour and the completely separate tour of the harem. The harem was particularly interesting as you see the various large sitting rooms and such for the imperial family, and the various sultans who ruled from this period of time had either from 1 to 18 different wives, and so there'd be whole suites for the wife and her family, for her children, and then in between the wives' suites and the sultan's suites was the sultan's mother's suite. And for the sultan to get from one to the other, basically, it was the mother who determined who the sultan was sleeping with or was not sleeping with, and who was going to be the heir, and she held a great deal of sway within that particular society. And then in the main palace, you see a lot of the formal rooms, the staterooms where people would be received. You see all of the furniture is coming from France. There are great big chandeliers on the ceilings, and it's a very ornate palace to display the power of the empire, even though the power of the empire is in reality in decline by this point. And this palace is also tied in not only to Ottoman Turkey, but into modern Turkey, because this is the spot where the first president of Turkey, Atatürk, who was the one who led Turkey in its war of independence, died. And so there is both the room where he died, a bed covered with the Turkish flag, as well as every clock in the palace is set to 9:05, which is the time of his death. And outside you also see the changing of the guard, which is going on in the grounds of the palace. The palace is located right on the Bosphorus, and so there is actually a dock that goes out to the Bosphorus from the palace. So a beautiful view from there on a beautiful day like we were at. And from the palace, it's about 2 miles up towards the Bosphorus Bridge along the water until you get to the lovely seaside town of Ortaköy. And that's a lovely cafes there. There's a pretty little mosque there. And you can also catch a boat there to do a cruise on the Bosphorus. And that's a wonderful thing to do on a nice day on the Bosphorus, is to cruise up the Bosphorus from Istanbul towards the Black Sea. Most of the cruises don't go all the way, but they go up as far at least as the Fortress of Europe, which was built by Mehmet the Conqueror just before taking Constantinople and turning it into Istanbul. And then across the way from it, you can see the Fortress of Asia, which was built before then by his grandfather as in preparation for the siege of Constantinople. Along the way, you'll see lovely marinas as well as other palaces and a lot of lovely houses, many of them from the 19th century. Only one more story in closing. I picked on carpet sellers a little earlier with the sound seeing tour there of the Grand Bazaar, but I want to tell you this story also. So when I came back into the city the second time, I was by myself, and so I was at a different hotel near the Sultanahmet Mosque, and I thought I knew where I was going, but I hadn't seen a really good map of the area. And I'm usually very good at navigating, especially when I've got a map. I can find my way around. But I hadn't found a good map, and it turns out it was completely in the wrong neighborhood. I came in at night. It's 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and I am completely lost. And I'm wandering around with my suitcase and my backpack, and I stopped a pizza delivery guy and thought maybe he would be able to find the hotel or know where that was. He didn't, but he went into a hotel there, and they sort of pointed me in the right direction. We'll go towards the carpet bazaar in this direction, and I went off that direction. I'm kind of looking around, trying to get my bearings again, and a fellow came out who owned a local carpet shop and took me in, and again, they called the hotel that I was trying to get to for the second time now and got directions, and he actually walked me for two or three blocks until I could see the hotel. And it was the second time, actually, that I was in Istanbul that when I asked for directions from someone, not only did they give me directions, then they actually just kind of went with me and walked until we could see where I was trying to go. And so I really did find the Turkish people, both the ones, obviously, that I met as well as these strangers, to be friendly. I do find that, you know, there are people who are trying to sell you things, and there's, you know, you need to keep your wits about you, but I found the people to be friendly, the food to be good, the history to be fascinating, the food, did I mention the food? to be wonderful, and I highly recommend Turkey. There are at least two people associated with the Amateur Traveler podcast who are located in Istanbul. Robin, who is the editor for the escapeartist.com, which is a newsletter for expats, has just bought a one-way ticket and moved to Istanbul, and I had a chance to meet with her for dinner. I also tried to get together with Kadri, who was very helpful as I was setting up this trip with some of the information that he posted to the discussion board, and unfortunately we weren't able to connect because of the Yahoo Mail's bulk filter filtered out my email at the last minute when we were trying to set the time. So maybe next time I'm in town, Kadri, I'd love to get together with you. But with that, we'll draw this to a close. If you have any comments for me, send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com, put them on the discussion board at amateurtraveler.com, or call the comment line at 206-MOM-LOVE. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show and Limelight.